Hi, I'm Sean Walsh.
And I'm Hillary Walsh. Welcome to Let's Get Rich. This is a podcast for entrepreneurs who are growing law firms so that they can live rich lives and leave rich legacies.
In each episode, we'll provide action steps to help you get unstuck, beat distraction, and find freedom.
Let's get rich.
Let's get rich.
What's up, my friends?
Hey, welcome to the Thanksgiving edition of Let's Get Rich.
The Thanksgiving anniversary edition, because we got married 19 years ago tomorrow. 19 years ago.
Amazing.
One niner.
It's just flown by.
Yes, it has. It feels like a Titanic lady. It's been 84 years.
That is not the first time you've used that reference today.
It's so classic, though.
It is a good one.
Yeah, well, happy anniversary.
Yes, thank you. Anniversary to you as well.
Thank you.
I've done a lot of work to make it to 19 years.
Yeah, I mean, I told the people at Filevine that it's clear that I have a commitment issue, that I make commitments and then won't break them because I stuck with them. And then now, actually, I really love working.
You really love
working.
And, I love Filevine. And look at our relationship.
Yes, so good. So good. Love it.
But yes, we've been married 19 years this week, which is pretty exciting.
And we're going to talk today about set points, kind of give you the walk down memory lane of set points. And if you haven't really heard about set points before, David Nagel does a really good job teaching this. So if you haven't been to Art of Success, obviously we are not selling anything, we're not getting commission on anything. This is just sincerely like things that I think are helpful. But David teaches an Art of Success summit, and in every Art of Success and kind of everything he does, he will talk to people about set points. And let me give you the Hillary Walsh version of it. Is imagine there is a line that is there's three lines, kind of like, remember when you were in elementary school and you had to write cursive and you know what I'm talking about, ledgers. Your set point's somewhere in the middle. It's like on those cursive handwriting things, it was the dashed line, and above that was upstairs, and then you go below the line, it was the basement. Did you guys talk about it that way?
No. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, anyway, the dotted line is in the middle of these other two lines. The dotted line is your normal. It's your comfort zone. If you go up and you're stretching yourself and you're going to the top of your set point, that's going to be, you know, you're starting to go outside of your norm. You're going to be working, you're going to be making more money. You're going to be driving a nicer car than all of your friends or your community members or the people who are in your clan or your clique or your normal. But if you go below your comfort, if you go below the middle little dotted line, you go down to a floor, which is your comfort zone that you will not, no matter what, go below. And that's, for some people, like, I can't imagine, I don't believe in my life I will ever be homeless. Like, I may not be able, I've never actually even, I don't think we've ever not paid bills. We've always at least paid the bill, even if we just paid the minimum that was due. But for some people, maybe they won't pay the bill and they will be a month or two late. Some people will like let their phone get shut off. These are their low point financially. This is their bottom. And so when you have a set point, and we do in our relationship, and as we grow personally and professionally and emotionally and everything else, we have these set points that we talk about them in this context, about them in a revenue sense or a money sense. But for me, I have a lot of set points around self-worth, about how my tolerance is, how much I'm willing to tolerate. I have a lot of set points around how happy I will allow myself to be. And that, again, is always tied to self-worth and those sorts of things.
I was always fascinated when I started learning set points also from David, was that I didn't pick my set points. And that once I realized that, really blew my mind that here were these things that I didn't even really know I had. We all have this internal set point around money and around other things.
What's normal?
But I didn't choose it. I didn't just wake up one morning and say, hey, my financial set point is going to be $100,000. If I make less than that, I'm below it. If I make more than that, I'm feeling good, whatever. But I didn't decide it. It was handed down to me on what my set point would be. And it wasn't until I became aware of that and started consciously deciding what I would do with my life that I realized I could choose my set point. A great example I remember is, and some people can probably relate, the first time you buy a nice car. And now, you know, for me, we'll go to this early on. I wanted a Tesla, but I was afraid that what people would say, right?
Oh, we cannot start with a Tesla. We have so many different set points before we get to the Tesla. But what? we'll flash forward.
But we'll flash forward, flash backward. The point was, when I finally got it, people commented on it. And the truth is that I didn't care at that point, but I was worried about that. But the idea is, if you're the first person in your neighborhood to get a BMW, all of your neighbors will say things like, ooh, look at Mr. Fancy Pants with their BMW. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking, right? But they're not joking. They're actually trying to bring you back down to the set point of your neighborhood or your peer group or whatever, because anything outside of that to them is this unknown. And they have this cognitive dissonance around it, meaning that they can't rationalize how you're growing and they're not. And so they have to bring you back down to their level in order for them to feel better about themselves. And a lot of times our set points are set by the five people we hang out with, or the neighborhood we live in, the house we live in, the people we socialize with, all of that. So when I learned this from David Nagel, it really made me aware of it. I started focusing and trying to change my own set points, which to this day, I still have a set point. It's different to what it used to be.
Yeah, we all do. I remember our set point when we joined How to Manage, and that was really the beginning of our, we were dabbling in personal development when we lived in Korea. I remember we both read The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, and I remember reading The Power of Habit and really liking that book. So much of what I was really obsessed with was trying to figure out how to stop drinking, because I knew that so much of that stuff was like really controlling my behavior and my outlook on life, and yet I kept doing it. And so I was trying to figure out how to like control that. And now, of course, I'm free of it because I just don't do it anymore.
And I read a lot on leadership, because that's what the military was really, you know, pushing, was read on leadership. And so I read John Maxwell, and I read other books on leadership and stuff. But we were just kind of dipping our toe.
But when we went to our first How to Manage event, and it was like, what do you want? And we were challenged to write down everything that we wanted, because that was going to help you then set how many people do you need to help in order to then have this money that can get you what you want.
I still have our vision board from the habit.
This was even before the vision board, because that was the business planning workshop. Mm-hmm. But this was the very first LQM that we went to, and we had.
I know where you're going.
We had a paid off minivan.
2011.
This was in 2018. Yeah. So it was just a couple. It wasn't even 10 years old. It was paid off, and guess what else it had? Leather seats.
That's right. It was a Honda Odyssey, a paid-off Honda Odyssey
that we had bought from the Batsons
in Korea.
And then we had brought it with us to England, right?
Yeah.
And then we moved it with us back to America.
And I remember at this workshop writing down, and they were talking us through everything we want. And somebody asked us.
It was the woman who I was working with. She was like, "Do you want a new car?" And I was like, "No. Why would I want a new car?"
Yeah, I remember saying that too. It's paid off.
Like, and it has leather seats, and I was like, the air conditioning doesn't work great. Like, it was a swamp in that car. And when it's 115 degrees out and you got all these little kids and a stroller and you're loading your groceries and everything, it was not ideal. But the thing was like in great shape. If you've ever driven a Honda Odyssey, you know those things last.
Yeah. And our financial set point was this idea that why would we get a new car? Like,
Why would you have new debt?
Almost that we didn't deserve it, or we wouldn't be able to pay it, or something. There was something inside of us that just said, yeah, why would you go buy a new car when you have one that's paid off, even though it's almost 10 years old and starting to break down and whatever.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So looking back, and I remember the woman who I was sitting with, and she just kind of like laughed at me, and she was like, okay. And that's what you want. And like, I wrote down these other things. And around that same time is when we got my Infiniti. And I remember, it's so interesting, these set points and what we think people will think. And that's why we stay in the same place that we're in. We stay on that little middle dotted line where our comfort zone is and where our social circle expects us to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, there's nothing wrong with the fact that our social circle expects us to be there. It's just like we need to be aware of what our social circle expects, because they are helping reinforce kind of what you were saying. They're reinforcing the set point.
And so that we don't have to caveat everything we say. There's nothing wrong with whatever car you're driving. You do you. We'll
totally,
do us.
Totally.
It's all good. But That way we don't have to keep saying,
like a judgmental turd.
No, it's not judgmental. We're talking about our own set point, and we all have
it. These are all material things that, like, whatever. But I remember getting, I got a, what was it, a 2013, 2014 Infiniti with leather seats.
Again. No, it was 2015. It was less than 5 years old.
Yeah, it was the nicest car I had ever owned, without a doubt.
It was a pre-owned. Yeah, Infiniti.
And we got it at the Infiniti dealership.
Yeah, like QX60.
We usually had gone to places like CarMax or someplace like that, but we got it at the Infiniti dealership, and they give you like donuts and coffee in the waiting room. And it was like a much more up-leveled experience, because while we had just come back from America, we had to buy a car because we only had the minivan.
We just moved back from England to America.
You were driving the minivan and sometimes the motorcycle. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I had sex with you. Ew. I would not do that now. But
19 years, babe.
We've really been through it all together. But anyway, I remember going over to CarMax, and the kids were all really little, and they were crawling around in CarMax's like play area. And it was disgusting. It hadn't been cleaned. Like, you could tell people had been walking around. I mean, these are little kids. Lincoln was 9 or 10 months old at the time, like barely crawling around. It was unsanitary. And then we went across town and went to the Infiniti dealership. And it was so nice and so clean. And I wanted desperately to be able to buy a car from there. That was basically like, I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to sell a kidney. We're not going to buy a car from this other CarMax place because I wanted a nicer experience. So anyway, we get that car. And I remember you didn't want to drive it on base because...
because I thought it was too nice.
It was too nice. People were going to say something about you being fancy. Mm. So funny. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. I remember driving it to the detention center. And at the time, I was doing pro bono work for the Florence Project. And I was driving it to the detention center to go work for someone for free. And I was afraid that someone from the Florence Project might see me in my fancy car and judge me for not being more dedicated to the cause of helping immigrants and instead spending money on myself and buying a fancy car.
And it was a $30,000 car for the record.
It's a $30,000 car. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. I'm out there working for free. Like, nobody cares. But this is all of these outward, all these inward things are reflections of somewhere, somehow, we picked up these stories about these set points.
At 30,000, I remember being kind of a set point, a number that we'd never spent more than that on really anything. And we were pre-approved for more than that when we went into the dealership. But we negotiated hard to get a car for under that, because that, for whatever reason, that was this number that just seemed like so much money.
Yeah.
That we'd never like held that much money before. And so that was a set point of ours that we didn't even realize we had. And then come to find out, that's a set point, but there's also set points in your business and in what we would charge a client and the prices that we set, because we have a number in our mind that we think is quote unquote a lot of money. And if we charge more than that, well, then we're charging a lot of money.
Right. Yeah. I remember, and this just stays with the car theme because it is such a reflection of like our different set points changing. When we sold the minivan, we traded it in, and basically I think they sold it for parts. We got a Lincoln Navigator, all tricked out, such a nice car. But I went in, I was like, I don't care what car you give me. I need it to be functional. I need it to have air conditioning in the front, middle, and back rows so that my kids are not hot and whatever. And we got a lease because I did not want to have the same car forever. And I tried to convince you it was time for you to get a lease. And I remember sitting at the computer at our old house, and he was like, just push the button, because you had built this Tesla. I really wanted a Tesla. This is in early 2020. So we hadn't moved yet, but we moved later that year. So this was in early 2020. Sitting there, just push the button. Just click lease. We can totally afford it. We will make it work. We've never not paid our bills. Like, everything's going to be okay. And I'm like giving you this pep talk. And you got your hand on the mouse, you got the thing built, and you would not click the button. And so you ended up searching and finding some like used Tesla.
Yeah, found a used one.
And didn't it end up falling through? Like, the deal ended up falling through?
No, it was the blue one.
Was it the blue one? I thought it was some other lease that you tried to do and it fell through.
No, so My holdup then was the idea of leasing versus buying, which is also part of a money mindset thing, because I had been raised to think that this was in some way an asset. A vehicle, if you're not sure, is not an asset. A vehicle is a liability, not an asset. There's two things in your balance sheet, liabilities and assets. Vehicles are liabilities. In fact, your house is likely on your balance sheet a liability, not an asset. Unless you're renting it out, then it becomes an asset. So in my mind, I just, why would you spend money on this thing that's supposed to be an asset and you don't even own it at the end? That's where I was stuck. And when I found this, you could buy one. It's only half as much as the lease. And then at the end, you still own it. And it didn't end up making us any money when we eventually got rid of it. So you're basically leasing anyway. You're just, you know, a different set point and not as nice of a car. And it wasn't exactly what I wanted. Basically, I settled for less because I had this story around the cost of the lease.
Yeah. And this is, again, this is like a car journey. I mean, you have a leased Tesla now that was brand new. I got that for you a couple Christmases ago. And now I can't wait to get rid of anything that's related to Tesla because I am not a fan of Elon Musk. But I even sold all my Tesla stock. And I was like, I don't care if I take a total windfall on this by principle, which I realized. Well, I mean, I wouldn't make
that either.
Whatever it might be. I say all that to say, like, I don't have a big car desire. I ended up getting, I had a sports car, like a really nice brand new Jaguar. I don't remember what it was. F model,
F-type.
F-type, beautiful car, super expensive car for like what I needed in my life. I did not enjoy that car, and I ended up getting like totally T-boned, and I walked away from it. Amazing recovery. Like, thank God I'm okay. But I did not miss that car. The day it was gone, I was just like, okay, well that's fine. I do not need to have a fancy car. I now drive a Lincoln Navigator. Lincoln Aviator. It's a fantastic car. It is, I don't know how much money, but I'm sure it's quite expensive compared to like the CRV that we used to drive. But now I'm past the set point of giving a crap. Before, I would drive the car and I would buy the car and think, what if my clients see me in this? I do not care if I was at that like Aston Martin event where all these billionaires and I was a speaker at it and all these billionaires were, and they were all leaving and they were getting in these like beautiful Aston Martins. I have no idea what an Aston Martin costs, but like, I do not want an Aston Martin. I do not, we even went and looked at like Bentleys and all these other, what did the billionaires drive? I wanted to know. And I considered getting one of those cars when my car was totaled. My sports car was totaled. I don't need that anymore because now I've scratched that itch where I don't have that like, that set point that is, if I had this, then I would feel that.
Yeah, I think this, the car analogy that we're using, it's not all about cars, but it is this idea that there's something holding you back. And for us, our set points were holding us back from growing our business from the next level. And they probably still are at this moment. As we speak, there's probably a set point.
Absolutely mindset set points holding us back.
And I find I continually confront this as the CFO of our company. When it's time to spend money, when it's like, hey, marketing team wants to do this new Christmas time ad campaign that's going to cost this much money, you know, can we do it? It wasn't in the budget, but we have this great idea. And that's a set point for me where I'm like, oh, hey, you know, we didn't budget for this. But there's something around it that's like, you know, that we have these internal set points that we don't even realize are there. And they, ours has been continuing to increase as we go. Which is nice because it opens up the world so much more and to the abundance that exists in the world. There is more of whatever it is you want in this life, whether it's money, cars, clients.
Employees, like, love. I think love. Yes, I think that the number of employees you have, like, people will get really wrapped around the axle around, like, you know, if I have too many employees, I won't be able to do this, or I see other firms that are like mine, and I don't know, like, all of this, when we're really evaluating why we're making decisions and we pull it apart and pull it apart and pull it apart, and Steph Tuss does a great job with this and says, why is that a bad thing? About every single answer. Why is that a bad thing? Why is that a bad thing? And it gets you all the way down to what the real core issue is, which, like, if someone on base sees you driving a nice car, why is that a bad thing? And it's like, well, they might think that I think I'm too good for them. Well, why is that a bad thing? Well, then I'm basically, you pull it apart. It's like, I might be ostracized by the group of people who I consider to be my tribe or whatever.
Which of them probably back to your core wound of
totally. And being so abandoned. You pull at those things yeah. and there's a set point that you won't go below and there's a set point that you won't go above until you really make the conscious effort to grow through it. And I think for our marriage, when we were around lots of people who had what I would call just okay marriages, we have just an okay marriage. And as we have become more intentional with really working hard to have a love story that I don't know, a couple of years ago, I saw this like really old couple on an airplane and they were like old and they were real old, probably in their 80s, which I realized maybe isn't that old, but right now it seems super old. But they were holding hands and you could like literally see through their skin. They were so old, they were like transparent. And they were holding hands and sitting in first class. And I was just like, this is life goals for me. Like, I really want to hold Sean's hand when I get old. And that changes when you're around people like that, and when you make that your set point, it makes your behavior different, and it makes everything kind of in your life different. So happy anniversary.
I hope this was helpful. If you're struggling with a set point, shoot us a DM. We can talk about it if you want. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I'll see you after.
Bye, friend.